We're in the closing days of getting a comprehensive, sweeping financial regulatory reform.
Billions and billions of dollars, millions and millions of jobs flow to China.
The decisions about accession to the euro are based on strict objective criteria.
Good Monday morning, everyone. We're looking forward into the long, hot summer with Marcus Mabry, Associate National Editor for our partner, The New York Times. Marcus, looking at the agenda this week, what's it all about?
Well, my word this week is hope.
Hope.
It's about
That's
hope.
Very upbeat.
It's a four-letter word that we rarely get to use around here, so it's very exciting.
And Charlie Herman, takeaways and WNYC's economics editor. Charlie, for you, this week is shaping up to be all about?
A lot of negotiations.
Yes.
Negotiations about currency, about financial regulations, even about if you want to buy a home, you got to negotiate the price.
All right, but let's just frame this. I mean, the reason why the oil crisis in the Gulf is not setting the agenda is because it's more or less permanent. We've got it. It is what it is. And that's where we stand.
People know that the oil is gushing in the Gulf. It hasn't been stopped. And really, I think traders have sort of anticipated that. That's been, in a way, baked into what the price is. And I think barring some other events that happen around the world, I think more eyes are tuned to what's happening in China with its currency, what's happening with Europe and its debt,
what's happening
in the U.S. with its economy.
Well, it certainly doesn't mean that the headlines are vanishing in the Gulf regarding the oil, that's for sure. But China seems to be responding to global forces in some sense and suggesting it will get closer to full currency convertibility. What happened over the weekend?
Well, over the weekend, China announced that they would let their currency be more flexible. They really had pegged it for the past 2 years to the U.S. dollar, which critics said kept that currency in China at a lower price or not as expensive, and basically made Chinese goods more affordable. So they said that they would let this float some, but whether or not it actually really does, or this is just a more image-making in advance of this meeting.
Let me back away on this. On the one hand, this has been a real point of contention between the U.S. and China in a bilateral way. But there are also forces in the global economy that make it essential for China to at least come off the fence on this whole position. Which do you think is more powerful, the U.S.-China relationship or global forces that are motivating China maybe to think about this a little differently?
I'm gonna split the baby here and say it's both. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both issues. One, it's the U.S. relationship, and it's also the fact that they do have Europe is China's largest trading partner. Europe is going through a lot of problems itself, clearly, so this is a bit of both.
Quick for you, Marcus. Even though the Gulf oil crisis is not going to set the agenda in Washington, you don't expect Obama to go to any yacht races like Tony Hayward did over the weekend, do you?
No. Unfortunately, Chief Executive Hayward has been, you know, beyond politically tone deaf to this entire, you know, crisis. It's been extraordinary to watch. And I don't know how much longer he'll be in his job, but it'll be interesting to watch.
It'll be interesting. You know, one of the things that caught my eye, we reported on this last week, Estonia is joining the Eurozone. Now, normally that would be a heroic milestone for any nation the size of Estonia, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But does Estonia now get to drag down the euro just like Greece has been doing over the past?
This goes back to my word.
All
of
due
hope.
Respect to Estonia.
Both what China did, it remains to be seen what kind of trading band they're going to let the currency appreciate in. But appreciation is good, and you know, kind of the headlines this morning have already been yuan or renminbi. Its currency goes by both those names. Has risen to, you know, record levels of modern history.
And we should say, if it goes convertible, it'll probably rise even higher. Right?
Oh, it certainly would. I think we can overdo the hope on it, but a little bit of hope goes a long way in this global economy right now. So that's really exciting. The hope is that this will lead to all kinds of, you know, excellent, better cooperation, you know, ahead of the G20 this week.
So embrace the yuan, but we're going to miss the croon. Marcus,
see, we will miss the franc, but don't we miss the franc? Don't we miss the lira? We miss them.
And they do. The Germans.
And the French really miss the mark in a big way. But this is actually, again, going back to hope, this is hope for Europe. Europe was looking so battered in the last few weeks, so desolate. It looked like a currency union with no meaning, with no policy behind it, no stability. It could not have been worse time for the euro. This Estonia move, and the fact that Little Estonia still wants to be a part of the Eurozone, the fact the Eurozone is still willing to let Estonia accede to the Eurozone, these are positive signs of stability and strength and confidence. And the market likes nothing better than stability and confidence.
Although, I just hope Estonia doesn't come to regret it a couple months from now.
Exactly. and in some ways, the Eurozone had no choice. I mean, if they said no more QEs, that would cause another round of instability in a sense that, you're not telling us the whole story here. So, Charlie,
that's true.
Does this shoot us back into the domestic economy to think, I mean, we've done pretty well benefiting, at least in trading terms, from European instability. What in the domestic economy is more of our focus this week?
A lot of things, actually, this week, especially housing. On Tuesday and Wednesday, we get some crucial figures on the housing market. These numbers are going to be a little bit difficult to read because of this tax buyer credit, this first-time home buyer credit that it ended at the end of April, but the way it's counted for existing home sales could make this number look bigger than the actual sales actually were. So we're really going to be a lot of sort of reading through these reports to see, is the housing market doing better? We'll get the GDP figures at the end of the month, and the Federal Reserve meets this week as well to give us a sense of what they think the economy is doing.
Let me ask you a housing question, Charlie. It's the old lagging, leading indicator kind of thing. You know, we hear that housing results, particularly starts and building permits, are leading indicators in the sense that if everything goes well and all these transactions are completed, it will mean more jobs. Why haven't we seen an uptick in jobs so far, even though the housing industry has had some pretty positive news?
I think it's more because the jobs market hasn't been very good. We're still at unemployment rates close to 10% nationwide. And until that gets better, I think a lot of people are not in a position to buy a home. So if the jobs market was doing better, if people had higher incomes, they might be buying homes, which would then perhaps lead to more jobs. Right now, everything's sort of focused on that jobs issue. I mean, it's surprising that manufacturing in the U.S. right now is really leading the economy. You're seeing hiring in manufacturing. You're seeing some surveys coming out about manufacturing doing well. So that's where it is right now.
All right. And the negotiations part here?
Well, the negotiations.
So you got to keep you on task.
Yeah, you got it. The financial regulations this week, those continue this week and into next
week.
All right.
But, you know, I don't think it's negotiations. I think, listen to Rahm Emanuel here. I think it's hope you hear in his voice here.
We're in the closing days of getting a comprehensive, sweeping financial regulatory reform to give the market certainty.
So for him to have that hope,
he's hoping for negotiations.
There we go. What specifically are we likely to see, you guys? So what's emerging from the committees here?
Well, one of the things they really have to address is this Volcker rule issue. I mean, some things are being worked out right now in the bill as it's going forward, but there's a lot of things that the financial industry is trying to weaken or change. This Volcker rule has to do with whether or not banks can use their own money to trade, whether or not they can have hedge funds. A lot of work there.
So it's all still in play, though.
A lot of it's still in play.
I mean, it's off the table. We're not talking about things off the table at this point.
Nothing is guaranteed till those negotiations are finished.
What is the hope, Marcus, when President Medvedev is scheduled to meet with President Obama on Thursday?
It could not be a more full agenda. The hope is already. There's hope because this relationship between the U.S. and Russia has improved so much more vastly than anyone anticipated.
Probably the most important legacy post-Bush of the Obama
administration. And surprisingly so. Obama said a year ago he's going to hit the reset button. He did, and it's actually worked. And it's not, that's a hopeful sign because that's not all been right. The case throughout the landscape of foreign affairs.
Marcus Mabry, Charlie Herman, Associate National Editor for our partner, The New York Times, and Charlie Herman, our own, The Takeaways Economics Editor. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
That's The Agenda.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.